Hello, welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. I'm Alice Arnold, and this week I'm speaking to Alice Fearn, who's starring in Wicked. When we're in the company office, of Wicked, and I'm sitting with Alice Fearn, who's who plays Elphaba in Wicked.
I do.
Not easy to recognise you because you're...
Completely. No, I'm very inconspicuous in my...
Normal.
Day-to-day gear.
I.e. not green.
Yeah, I know. Unless you look really closely at my hairline and then it might give away.
Where you didn't look, quite...
It's embarrassing.
She's right.
Yeah.
There is a tinge...
I'm so sorry.
...of a greenish...
The small price to pay is tinge. What I call it.
Anyway, it's a beautiful summer's day and here we are inside. Now, I came to see the show with you and Sophie a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And then I found a ticket stub in my pocket from Wicked, which shows I don't wash my clothes often enough. But anyway, it was from 12 years ago. When I first saw it
with the Adina Menzel.
Yes, yes. So the first thing that struck me was when I first saw it 12 years ago, it was like watching a Broadway production, I think.
Absolutely.
It was very American.
I completely
Everything agree. Was American. Everybody was American, whether they were American or not American.
Sure,
they
okay.
Spoke American. And the first thing that struck me was, this is not American, this is very British.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, when you have, Sophie's Welsh, but, you know, I think a lot of them did have the British accents back in the original, but obviously Adina will have spoke relatively American, I would imagine. So we are very, very RP now, I suppose. We've gone even further. We've embraced, I suppose, the fact that we're very British and we're doing our Shears and our Oz. Why can't it be with English accents? I suppose we really embrace that. And yeah, I don't think it affects the story at all. I think it's quite nice to hear. Because then it really highlights for me the wizard, because he's obviously from Kansas and what have you, and you suddenly go, yes, I can really hear that American accent. And I think sometimes it helps the audiences go, oh, yeah, that's, you know, you sort of connect the two dots. So it is very British, I think, yeah.
Yeah, no, and what it does is it enables you to completely put your stamp on the performance rather than doing somebody else's.
Absolutely.
You are you. And that's the other thing I noticed, that for both of you, bringing your own brand of humour to it, your own...
Very much so, yeah. I think when sometimes actually an accent, it seems negative, but you can hide behind an accent if you're in a show doing an accent. When I did Shrek, it was very much that I had an American accent and it felt like I could really disappear into that character even more so then when it's a British accent and it's pretty much my regular sort of talking accent, it is sort of very much me. It feels a lot more connected to me. So yeah, you create your character feeling that is a little bit more of you in her than maybe in other parts that you've played before. Mm.
And has the part you've been doing it for about a year now?
I stand by it first. So I've done it. I've been playing it for a year, and I was about 10 months before that standby for it. So yeah, so almost nearly 2 years I've been involved with the show itself. Yeah.
And has it changed for you since you've been?
Well, weirdly, doing it now? I would say that I don't notice that I've developed it or changed it much. I suppose throw myself into the part each night. I do what I do. I tell the story and what have you. And actually, when I have friends come that maybe saw me when I was standby and to now, they go. A famous quote from my friend was, "She's a very different beast, darling." Now, and I was like, "Yeah, is it really? I didn't really know." And because I don't ever see it, I suppose when you're there every day, it's a bit like, you know, not realizing someone's got much older because you're with them every day. You know, it's that sort of same thing. I don't realize that she's developed, my Elphaba has developed particularly, but of course I suppose she has, because I get to know her that little bit more every day. So of course she'll move, she'll become something maybe
and you play around with it more, presumably.
Yeah,
when the part's
well,
your own and you're not standby anymore,
you feel you can grow and grow within the part and try new things, see if they work. Because also, you know, we don't want to keep it too boring for ourselves. Obviously, we will always sing the same lines and do the same staging. But, yeah, for your own head and for your own creation of the part, you do move and you do sort of try new things just to see if that works. And absolutely some don't. But some hopefully do. And so absolutely she grows from that.
Now, everybody asks you, we've talked about this, about being green, but you said I was going to avoid that as just like boring question, but actually you said you've got a good answer for it. So tell us about the green makeup.
Well, it's really
how you get
interesting.
It on, how you get it off.
Because people always ask me, you know, like, how... Because I can get out of this theatre. So I come down, we come down about between 10 past and 15 minutes past 10. And I will be out of the theatre by 5:30. And yes, it's dark, so it helps a smidge. But I will majoritatively get this green paint off. And the people are amazed. And there will be, you know, fans at stage door and people who watch the show just going, I don't understand why you look like that right now, because how have you done it? And I think it's really amazing because it's the water-based makeup that is so thick, and it and then it's.
Does someone help you put it on?
Oh, someone put it on for me. I'm not allowed.
No, it's very, very evenly put on. I notice.
Yeah, it's very even.
It's no clumpy bits like fake tan.
Yeah, it has to be really, really blended, and the lines can't be too sharp from where it stops, so it obviously seeps through. So it's really, really, yeah, it's specific, and also I don't know if people will notice it, but it's she gets darker by act two. So as the show goes on, her green gets darker as she ages.
So does someone do that for you in the interval?
Someone darkens it in the interval. Oh. She gets more of an eye. So there's more and more paint put on. And then to dry it, what they do is they put this sort of like what can only be described as talcum powder, almost basically all over it to dry it so it sets in place, like a setting sort of spray in a way. And if the more you sweat, obviously, the more it's going to sort of slightly lift. But I am sort of lucky in that I don't sweat an awful lot. I'm not a profuse sweater. So it stays on quite well. But, yeah, getting that off in the shower is one of the biggest challenges. A lot of scrubbing. My face is constantly exfoliated from the scrubbing. I managed to get it off with a combination of, like, oils and baby shampoo, randomly. That's the gift. And actually, Villamine, who was before me, taught me the baby shampoo thing. What on earth is in baby shampoo? I don't want to say.
Some things just work for those things, though, don't they?
They do. Yes. And it really gets a great lather once you've used the oil and you've still got plenty in your face, trust me. Then I get all this baby shampoo and I that's what finishes and takes everything else off. And I can do that in like 10 minutes. I mean, I don't look great. Don't get me wrong. I don't look, you know,
right,
Oscar worthy. but I definitely look acceptable to get on a train home.
Now, the other thing that you have to do in the show, apart from being green,
yep,
is you have to go very high up.
As in fly?
As in fly.
Yeah.
Do you have any... Is heights all right for you?
Heights have always been fine. Yeah, okay, I've got a problem with edges.
Easy.
Weirdly. You know, like if you stand, not that I particularly ever do on a day-to-day basis, but on like a cliff edge, you know, or like a platform edge, that I really don't like. But up being high, like in a plane, I can look down, that's absolutely fine, or anything like that. So when we did the flying originally, I've got this sort of thing that clamps around me so that it protects me, because I could feel that, not bothered in the slightest.
Safe.
Because I just knew I was safe, I had that to cling on to. And so then when I flew, it was quite, you know, quite liberating, actually. But yeah, I mean, if you've got a problem with flying, that's not the greatest moment.
It wouldn't be. Now, you were in the film of Les Miserables.
Yes, I was.
Tell us about that.
Well, I did Les Mis, 2008. And anyone who'd sort of been in the show before or previously was sort of given the chance to audition for the film. Because there's so many little bit parts, so many different scenes, so many wonderful things that you can sort of be involved in. And they wanted people that knew it, because it was obviously being recorded vocally live. So they needed people that could sing, and they couldn't just get anyone sort of... And so, yeah, I got part of the factory scene, one of the opening scenes, really. And we were on location. We were down, I would say, like, sort of the East Country a little bit, down the bottom of East Essex way. And I was in a scene with Hugh Jackman. I saw Hugh Jackman. I met Hugh Jackman. I spoke to Hugh Jackman.
What did you say to him, and what did
you
say
to you?
Well,
sort of probably embarrassing, just, oh, my God, I'm such a fan. You know, such a fan. And he is probably one of the nicest people on earth. Very, very giving, like, would make sure he'd come in and say hello to everyone, no matter how many people are on set. He's just one of those kind of guys. Russell Crowe I saw as well, nearly fainted.
Did he say hello to everyone too?
He said a sort
he
of
didn't,
really...
Did he? Go on, he didn't.
No, he walked past me at the buffet car, and I was sitting there having a thing, and I just looked up, and I saw he was walking past, so I definitely wanted to get to stare, and he just went, hey. And I definitely sort of thought, that's a passing out sort of moment. Then walked off, didn't speak much more than that. Hugh Jackman, full conversation. I don't know what that means.
No.
But still, they were great. No, it was such good fun, and it was a real experience as well, because singing that live as well, we all had little in-ear pieces that we had to sing, and that was quite difficult to hear. So there were so many challenges on top of it just being
so you're wearing earpieces.
You had to have these tiny little ears, right? Because the music was being played just offset on a piano, and you had to listen to the piano and obviously sing along, and then that would be the final recording. So I mean, and then they put the orchestra on top of you. So if you were pitchy, that was the other problem. If we couldn't hear the piano very well, which was often,
right,
then the orchestra were having to play against people that were singing a little bit sharper flat. So it was, God love the people.
Could you hear each other for that? Well,
yeah,
not
really well. But you know, when it's only one dodgy piano in your ear, it was a real challenge. Which, you know, so that for everyone, you know, the sound department must have just worked so hard to get that together.
And then microphones all over the set, presumably.
Yeah, microphones is normal, yeah. But it was the challenge of getting us to hear the music so we could sing along, that I think was the key. But they did it, and they did it really, really well. And yeah, that was great. And it was the show for me, Les Mis, was what got me into musical theatre. I remember watching the 10th anniversary when I was a kid and going, this is musical of my dreams. And to get in, it was that step. And then to be a part of the film, I just went, that's the perfect sort of circle to finish off my sort of performing dream in a way.
But then you came into, well, there were other things in between.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it was in between, yeah.
Before getting to Wicked.
Wicked, when it started. See, I was actually in Les Mis when I saw Wicked. And it was, I couldn't audition for it at the time, but I always said that's something I could do really mm-hmm. well. That, and I'm determined. I mean, it was a good 5 tries before I got it, but yeah, it was always something I knew I wanted the challenge of doing and could do. Mm-hmm. So it was just whether that time was going to come for me, but it luckily did.
Right,
yeah.
It did. And you're in with Sophie, but you have a great relationship with her.
Yeah.
In the show, it looks like you have
I love her.
Really, really well.
I love her on and off stage. Yeah, she's an absolute dream. She's funny and silly and everything. And she is Glinda in real life, to in most respects, really. So that's what I enjoy so much, is that her portrayal is so truthful, and that's lovely to play opposite, because we're both very similar in our attacking of those roles. We both wanted them to be real, truthful people that you could believe in, and she very much comes at that from her perspective as well. So that's, I think, maybe another reason why we work so well together.
I'm watching it 12 years on, as I did the other week. Yeah. The audience now, of course, all know it. So when I first came to see it, it was on this new show, and no one really knew what to expect. Now they certainly know what to expect, don't they? They
come waiting for lots of people, waiting for lots of different sections. Yeah, they do. Yeah,
and kids, and I mean, loads of kids in the theatre.
Yeah,
but it's almost like a sort of festival spirit when you go in, and the theatre's all green, and everything's green.
Yeah,
and
I love that. There's so many things that sort of have filtered into, because it's been here for so long, and they've really sort of set into the building now. Which I love. And then, you know, you've got all the green lights outside that just sets it all up.
Yeah, you enter the world of Wicked when you come in. And then everyone's like going to a concert where they know all the songs.
Yeah, and they're waiting for certain bits. It's lovely. Yeah. It's really nice. And I think what I love is that we get so many different people. We get obviously it's kids love it. And teenagers and school kids also love it. But, you know, we do get a lot of older people that come thinking they're not going to love it. Maybe, and coming out just going, oh my God, that's so much more than I expected it to be. You know, it's not just a kid show. It's a really lovely story.
Yeah. Oh no, I don't think it's a kid show at all. I think it's quite complicated.
No, I know. Well, it is, and I mean, a lot of them, you know, will go. A lot of the stuff will go over the kids' heads
Probably. I had to ask questions when I came to see it. Even the second time, there were bits I wasn't. It's quite deep.
Well,
it's
very deep. My dad actually read the script when I first got the job. I took the script up to learn it sort of while I was with my folks, and he read it while I was there, and he just went, what, explain this bit to me. And he was really sort of going
through
it.
See, me and your dad, we'd get on very well.
You were same boat, darling, same boat. So it is, I think you do have to really sort of concentrate quite a lot, because there's so much you can miss, and it's a shame if you miss it, because there's not a thing that's there in a pointless way. Everything's there for a reason. It's to enhance the story and to enhance the characters. And there is so much to miss. But
and if you know The Wizard of Oz, it helps, I guess, as well, because you've got those references, you see, from that, with shoes and houses falling down and things.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know many people that don't know The Wizard of Oz, but I'm probably, that's probably my ignorance. Because I would have thought everyone in some respects knows The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, the basic
parts of it. So, yeah. No, I would say you need to know it a little bit, just to get yourself through. Otherwise, it's just, I mean, still, it's probably quite a lot of fun seeing someone running around the stage green and flying and monkeys.
Even
and
if you go, well, why is that? Well, it doesn't matter. I don't know why.
Doesn't
that's
matter.
Happened,
I don't know. But I liked
thoroughly
it.
Enjoyed it anyway. but so you wanted to be in Les Mis.
Yeah.
Then you saw Wicked. Wanted to be in Wicked.
Everything I what's, said, I sort of want to be in.
Do you want to be in? Yeah. What's the next?
What's the
have
next?
Have you got your eye on the next?
To be
aim?
Honest, I never think of it like that. I never sort of go, oh, I'm going to do. I want to do that next or anything like that. I sort of. What comes up, I go, oh, yeah, it's quite a nice audition. I'd like to see that. I'd like to do that, maybe. And things like, you know, that I've done things that I love in my career that I didn't expect. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was a massive one. I saw Dirty Rotten Scoundrels in on Broadway years and years and years ago. And I thought, God, that's a great show. Never come to London. And I didn't even know it was coming until my agent called me to say I had an audition for it. And I went, what are you talking about? It's coming here. And he went, yeah. I went, that is my favourite show ever. I'm going. It's a great coming. You know, so stuff like that I like. And I just like to not know and to not expect. Because also if you expect, it's more of a letdown when you don't get it or don't get seen. You know, and this is a business of so many letdowns anyway. The last thing you need to do is build something up in your own head beforehand. So I let my agent worry about that. That's what I sort of pay him for, to worry on my behalf.
Yeah. If you, not a whole show, but if you just could perform one song from a musical, what would you choose?
I really am enjoying Waitress, the new musical by Sarah Bareilles. It's over on Broadway.
Aye.
And it's a fantastic score, and I particularly love She Used to Be Mine, as do a lot of people. It's become quite a famous song from that musical. I would love to. I think that's a fantastic song. I've sung it a couple of times. It's on my album actually as well. So, it's a brilliant song. It's so simple. And I think that's what I quite like about it. I like songs that are simple because actually it's one of my For Good in Wicked, and I mean simple as a compliment because some of the best things are said simply and wonderfully. And I think For Good's another one of those moments where it's just so simply and easily put. There's no bump and bravado with it. It's just, it's such a simple, beautiful moment. So, yeah, sometimes the easier the songs, the better.
Yes. Well, that which is Stephen Schwartz's sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doing that. Well, there are moments in Godspell where you just think that is so, so simple.
Absolutely.
You know, by my side or something. And you think that's just the simplest thing, and yet it's...
And yet it means
absolutely
the most.
Magical.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Means the most. Leading men, who would be, apart from, well, Hugh Jackman, obviously, big, well,
clearly,
Russell Crowe didn't
there,
quite, Russell Crowe didn't quite do it for, well, I mean, that
yeah,
might
no,
be a one-sided
maybe, maybe the
thing.
Dream is better than the reality.
Maybe.
On
it might just be your dream and not his.
Yes, very much so. That's very likely.
I'm just putting that out
that's
there.
All right, that's all right.
But if you could choose any leading man.
Yeah, I've got it.
Yeah?
It's Chris Pine. You don't know who Chris Pine is?
No.
Right, okay. So, you know the new Star Trek movies?
No, see, I've never seen Star Trek.
I don't know if we can be friends, Alice. I don't know if we can be friends. Okay, he played in New Into the Woods film.
Right.
Of the musical.
Yes, yes.
He played one of the princes.
Okay.
In that.
So right.
He's quite a big Hollywood actor, darling. I think you need to kind of come out to it. Oh, so
I need to get out more.
He's absolutely number
on my
one.
Part. Okay.
Very close second is George Clooney, but I'm not going to beat Amal.
No, I know who that is.
In a million percent. There's no way I can beat Amal.
Didn't she look fabulous in her? Did you
she
like
looked
the mustard
constantly
outfit?
Constantly fabulous. Like it's.
She
it's,
looked great at
it's
the wedding.
Painful.
I think they
she's
won
so
prettiest couple, apart from obviously the bride and groom. But I think
I agree
did,
though.
They,
yeah.
They
she's
did
flawless.
Look
and it's sort of effortless.
But also incredibly brainy.
I know.
I mean, you know, top,
like she
top
I got it all. George Clooney as a husband.
Yeah.
I mean, like
yeah.
sickening, isn't it?
Yeah. But then he's got her. He's got the most beautiful woman who's also fantastically brainy and does civil rights cases and all of that
Some
stuff.
People just have it all.
So as a couple. and I bet they're really nice as well.
I bet they're
I bet
so
they
nice.
Are. I bet we can't even say, but then
actually
no one likes
sure.
them. I don't think that's true. I think they've got lots of friends as
I
well.
I completely
They've
concur.
Got everything. Everything. Right. Are there any other things I was going to... Oh, yeah. What do you eat between shows? To keep your strength up, because
well,
a big part.
It's
a
massive
huge
part.
Thing.
It's a huge
massive
thing, and you are really never off. So,
no.
And there's a lot of running around, and you know, getting changed and running substage and up again. And so, it is quite a full-on 2.5 hours. So you have to take in quite a good hearty meal, is how I describe it. I'll always have something carby, really, if I'm honest. You know, a good pasta or. Mm-hmm. And I have it straight away after the show, because then I need sort of an hour to let it digest, because if I heat it too close to the show and then you go and run around with these heavy costumes on, I mean, you're just...
That's what the genie said from Aladdin. Can't eat 3 hours before the show.
Gives himself a cut-off point,
because he says you get all feel a bit funny.
Yeah, you get you know your own body a little bit. I can sort of, if I've got an hour and a half, I can get away with it. Mm. But yeah, I'll try. So I do tend to eat quite well and quite heartily. And if I don't, I'll definitely notice it, possibly the next day as well. But I've got my brilliant dresser Troy, who's there with, like, you know, sugar tablets or something if I start to have a moment, or a Gaviscon, you know, just standing by just in case.
But also vocally, it's an incredible,
yeah, it's huge
role. On, and do you think your voice has got stronger and more sort of resilient as the
very
years gone
so.
On?
Yeah,
because it's
really
a muscle
do.
And it gets strong.
It's a muscle that gets stronger. Yeah, there's no yeah. I didn't realise it was standby as much. I thought I was actually sort of worried about it, thinking, oh my God, how's my voice going to react? And actually, you sing it with the right technique, and you sing not on a sore throat or whatever, you're going to, that voice is going to get stronger. And if I've been on holiday, and I come back, that's the week will be my hardest week, because it's had too much time off.
Yeah.
And actually, if after 3.5 weeks I'm still going, and there'll people be like, how are you doing? I'm like, because actually now it's probably in there. Unless I get ill, you know, that my voice is better this the end of 3 weeks than it is if I come back, like, after
Do you
a holiday.
Do 8 a week?
Yeah.
You do
yeah.
all 8.
And yeah, you have to sort of, you know, you have to have your... you can't, you know, blow your voice out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You've really got to think about it and make sure that you're you know, being safe and singing technically well, not, you know, going too much. I don't really go out after the show. I go home and I pretty much get as much sleep as I can. I'll still do stuff in the day. I make sure I have a life in the day, but you do have to protect yourself quite a lot. Mm. Doing 8 a week of this and know if you've got 2 tomorrow what that means for you, you know. And sometimes I've got a little dog at home, but sometimes I'll just take to my fiance in the morning. If I've got 2 shows, I'm like, there's no way I can even get out. I'm staying here.
What sort of dog have you got?
I've got a little Tibetan terrier called Phoebe.
I've got a Tibetan
no,
terrier
have
called
you?
Archie.
Yes. Aren't they the best?
Archie's not actually. He's a pretty rubbish dog.
Oh.
I mean, we love him to death. He's 13 years old. But if I had to list all the things that he's done wrong in his life,
it would be a long list.
And if I had to list the things he's done right in his life, that'd be really short.
Probably one of the first dog people to ever have this reaction.
However, he is unbearably good looking.
Yeah, they are very good.
And that's why he gets away with the dreadful things that he does.
Mine's quite well behaved, actually.
When you've got a girl.
So I've got a girl, maybe it is that.
If we went again, we would definitely get a girl.
It's always
not that he's very boy like. He's just
a bit of a nightmare.
He's just a nightmare.
Phoebe chewed up my BT line when she was 6 months old, but that was
the worst thing she's ever done.
So you forgive, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, 200 quid later, and the BT man comes and fixes it. You know, you're swearing and you're saying, why did I get you?
Yeah.
But after that, it's been clean sailing.
What colour is she?
Black and white.
Yeah, Archie's black and white.
Yeah.
Thrilled to meet you. All the very best for the rest of your career. I'm Alice Arnold, and that was the Musicals and Theatre Podcast. If you enjoyed that, then you can hear me every Saturday and Sunday morning from 6 till 10 on Mellow Magic, where I've lots of lovely, timeless, relaxing classics, musical numbers, and interviews.